Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Czech President Petr Pavel is visiting Ukraine together with his Slovak counterpart Zuzana Čaputová. Czechia wants to see the EU pursue a more cautious foreign policy towards China, according to the country's foreign minister Jan Lipavský. And one of Czechia's most important post-war dramatists, Ivan Vyskočil, has passed away at the age of 94. Czech President Petr Pavel arrived in Ukraine early on Friday in what is his first official visit to the country since being elected Czech head of state at the beginning of this year. Travelling with his Slovak counterpart Zuzana Čaputová, Mr. Pavel met with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. The Czech president said that he would push for Ukraine's EU accession talks to begin by the end of the year and added that for Czechia, Ukraine's membership in the EU and NATO is not a question of if, but when. The pair travelled together by train for the state visit, arriving in the city of Nemyshaeve, 38 kilometres northwest of Kyiv, shortly after another round of Russian missile attacks had been launched on a number of Ukrainian cities, including the Ukrainian capital overnight. Ahead of meeting the Ukrainian president, Pavel and Čaputová visited the Wall of Remembrance of the Fallen for Ukraine in Kyiv, laying down flowers to honour those who died defending the country from Russia's aggression. Both heads of state also laid down wreaths on Kyiv's Sofia Square in order to commemorate the so-called Oath of the Czech Squadron, or Přísaha České družiny. The oath took place on the site during the First World War on October 11, 1914. The soldiers who took it were part of the first unit formed on the territory of Tsarist Russia to fight against the Central Powers. The date is generally considered as the beginning of the formation of the Czechoslovak legions on the Eastern Front. These were units of Czech and Slovak soldiers whose efforts played a key role in helping eventually set up the independent Czechoslovak state. Also, Czechia's president visited the famous site of the Russian war crimes in Bucha and Borodyanka, north of Kyiv. Speaking in Borodyanka, Mr. Pavel said that the damage to the settlement reminded him of the destroyed houses in Afghanistan and the former Yugoslavia, adding that he thought he would never see something like this happen in Europe. However, he also added that he wasn't too surprised, as I quote, "Russia has shown much inclination towards barbarism in recent years," end quote. He also said that the large number of attacks by Russia on Ukrainian civilian targets shows that this is the Kremlin's intent rather than a case of multiple accidents, and that Russia is hoping to create chaos and terror among the civilian population and thus pressure the Ukrainian government towards making concessions. The Czech president received a medal commemorating the Bucha tragedy from the governor of the Kyiv region. It is in Czechia's interest that the EU chooses a more cautious approach towards China and deepens its relations with the United States, the country's foreign minister Jan Lipavský has said in an interview with the Czech news agency published on Friday. He added that European states need to be better prepared for the fact that Beijing may exert pressure on them through their current dependencies on China. He also warned that a switch in the EU's decision-making mechanism towards majority voting would give an advantage to Germany and France, countries that are currently pursuing a more benevolent policy towards Beijing. The United States, on the other hand, have been keen to limit technological ties with China. Czechia's struggling state-owned postal company, Czech Post, recorded a loss of 1.7 billion crowns in 2022, following up on more than a billion crowns in losses the year before, according to the company's own Friday press release. Falling revenues from service sales and postal traffic were not offset by the company's significant downsizing efforts, which saw employee numbers fall by 2,000 to just under 23,000. The company is expected to announce a large-scale restructuring plan by the end of the first half of this year. This is expected to include the closing down of many of its branches as well as further downsizing. Already 300 branches have been closed. If these changes are not implemented, the company expects its losses would reach 4 billion crowns in 2023 and lead to its bankruptcy. Almost half of Czechs would not want a Muslim neighbour, according to the results of a CVVM survey announced on Thursday. However, drug addicts, alcoholics and people with criminal histories were the least popular category of neighbour, with 89%, 69% and 64% of people respectively saying they wouldn't want such people living next to them. Some 37% of respondents said that they would not want mentally ill people as neighbours, while people with a different skin colour and foreigners living in the Czech Republic would be unwelcome for 15 and 14% of respondents respectively. The Public Opinion Research Centre runs this survey every year, and says that although levels of prejudice remained relatively stable between 2003 and 2020, the numbers for most of the monitored groups decreased this year by 10 percentage points or more. One of Czechia's most important post-war dramatists, Ivan Vyskočil, died on Friday at the age of 94. The Czech news agency reports, citing the vice-chancellor of the Academy of Performing Arts in Prague, Jan Hančil. One of the initiators of the so-called small-form theatre in Czechoslovakia, Mr. Vyskočil was a well-known figure on the Czech culture scene during the 50s and especially 1960s. He co-founded the famous Nazábradlí Theatre in Prague, where he also played a leading role, working as an actor, dramatist and director. He was subsequently the artistic director of the Czech capital's well-known Salon Reduta, until falling out of favour during the normalisation period following the Prague Spring. Nevertheless, Vyskočil continued to be active in theatre and also worked as a teacher. In fact, in the early 90s, he founded and subsequently led the Department of Authorial Creativity and Pedagogy at the Theatre Faculty of the Academy of Performing Arts, which is perhaps better known as DAMU. During his life, Vyskočil also wrote several theatre and radio plays and acted in many movies. In 2010, he received the Thalia Award for Extraordinary Contributions to Theatre from the Czech Actors Association. Finally, we come to the weather. Saturday is expected to see temperatures range around 16 degrees Celsius. However, I have some bad news. Rainfall is predicted across the country, with the exception of Western Bohemia. My name is Tom Attencrow, and that is all the news for now.
Hello there, listener. This is Radio Prague International, and my name is Ian Willoughby. Today, Czech President Petr Pavel visits the sites of Russian atrocities on a visit to Ukraine. Why is it that 4 in 10 Czechs now live alone? And later, a new exhibition in Prague looks at Czech-Jewish athlete Kurt Epstein, and we hear his story. All that's coming up, so do please stay with us. Czech President Petr Pavel arrived in Ukraine early on Friday morning, shortly after Kyiv and other cities were hit by Russian missiles. Accompanied by his Slovak counterpart, Zuzana Čaputová, Mr. Pavel visited the sites of atrocities and criticized Moscow's attacks on civilian targets. Anna Fodor has more.
The Czech and Slovak presidents set off by plane on Thursday to Rzeszów in Poland, from where they were taken by car to Przemyśl, close to the border with Ukraine. They then boarded a train and from there continued their overnight journey to Kyiv together. After arriving at the railway station in the city of Nemyshayeve, 38 kilometres northwest of the capital, the two presidents were welcomed by the Czech ambassador to Kyiv, Radek Matula, and the former Ukrainian ambassador to Czechia, Jeven Perebienis, among others. Mr. Perebienis said Mr. Pavel's presence in Ukraine is significant for the country.
Czechia is a significant partner for us, a country that supports us and provides us with aid, including of the military kind. Of course, this is President Pavel's first visit to Ukraine, and I know President Zelensky is very much looking forward to meeting him in person.
The first place the presidential pair headed directly after arriving at Nemyshayeve railway station was Borodyanka, which was bombarded heavily by Russia at the beginning of the war, and is one of the places where Ukraine accuses Russia of committing war crimes. From there, President Pavel visited the town of Bucha, the site of Russian war crimes where a mass grave was discovered last spring. Mr. Pavel emphasized the necessity of continuing to support Ukraine, saying this would decide whether or not the country will be able to defeat the Russian occupation forces.
The moment that we stop or our help starts to wane, then they'll be left alone and it'll be very difficult for them to succeed. And it's in our interest that they succeed, because what they're fighting for here is also the basis of our world values.
The Czech and Slovak presidents arrived in the country shortly after another round of Russian missile attacks had been launched on a number of Ukrainian cities, including Kyiv, overnight. Mr. Pavel commented on the attacks, saying that the sight of bombed-out houses brought back memories of the war in the former Yugoslavia where he served, and criticizing Russian attacks on civilian targets.
When it happens this many times, that's not a mistake. It's clearly planned. And the plan is obvious, to create chaos and terror among the civilian population, and on the basis of that, create pressure on the government and break their will to defend themselves.
A meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is also on the agenda for this afternoon, and President Pavel is due to present plans for Czech involvement in the post-war reconstruction of Ukraine during his visit to Kyiv.
A new Eroslas.cz report has found a sharp rise in the number of single-occupant homes in Czechia, from 32% in 2011 to 39% a decade later. The jump is attributed to an increase in single people in major cities and more seniors, often widows, living by themselves. I discuss the findings with the report's author, Jan Boček, of Czech Radio's data journalism team.
There are two main causes. One of them is the increase of single-person households in Sudetenland, which is probably mostly older people, especially ladies, because they live a bit longer than men. So most of them are probably widows. And then the other trend is the increase of single-person households among young people living in big cities, so like in Prague and in Brno and Ostrava, which are single people.
Why are there so many? It seems to me in Prague there's 50%, almost 50%, 47% single occupancy households. Why is it so high?
In the large cities, you get a lot of different lifestyles and people are used to living single. So it's easier in bigger cities to live like this. But we can see that this number, this percentage, increased over time. We got the data from these censuses since 1930s, and we could see that in the 1930 there were about 8% of single-person households, and now it is overall 40% in the Czech Republic. So you can see it's slowly increasing.
Are there parts of the country where people are more likely or most likely to live together, I guess mainly in family units?
Yeah, especially in the southern Moravia and the highlands, there are more full families, complete families, and it may be partly due to much higher religiosity than in the rest of the country. But we can also see more full, complete families around the big cities, which are the satellite towns and villages.
I saw on Twitter that you referred to the fact that in the UK, they created a Ministry of Loneliness. And in the UK, there's around 30% single-occupant homes, which is considerably less than here. I guess that should be taken to suggest that there is an actual social problem or potential social problem with loneliness in Czechia.
In 2018, we registered this Britain new ministry, and we wrote an article about this, and we asked the Czech government whether they plan to do anything about loneliness here in the Czech Republic. And they told us that it's divided between two ministries, between the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Social Affairs, and that it's hard to do anything about it because not one of them is interested in that.
Now, a new exhibition dedicated to the Olympic athlete Kurt Epstein opens at Prague's American Center on Tuesday and runs until the 30th of June. It's been put together by his daughter, Helen Epstein, who spoke to me about her father. Jewish athlete Kurt Epstein played on the Czechoslovak water polo team and represented the country at two Olympic Games, including the 1936 Nazi Olympics in Berlin. Epstein is the subject of a new exhibition set to open at the Terezin Ghetto Museum next week. It's been put together by his daughter Helen Epstein, who previously wrote a book about him entitled A Jewish Athlete, Swimming Against Stereotype in 20th century Europe. The author spoke to me from her home in the US. Your father was from Rodnice nad Labem. What do we know about his family background in that town?
His family was one of the oldest family of Rodnice, which itself is one of the oldest settlements of Jews in the Czech lands. There were four of these outside of Prague, and Rodnice was one of them. His family were tanners, which is one of the traditional Jewish occupations in Central Europe. And by the time my father was born, his father was one of the most prominent manufacturers in Rodnice. He had a leather goods factory. And that factory was in ruins for many years. And now there's a Czech family building a multifamily dwelling on that property. And the house that my grandfather built in 1900 is now the Podzipski Museum.
So you've been to Rodnice nad Labem yourself?
Yes, I was first there after the Velvet Revolution in 1990, and I wrote an article about it for the New York Times magazine, about the trip back. And at the time, there were offices in my grandfather's house, and a former friend and neighbor of my father's was still alive, Mr. Paudera. And Mr. Paudera took me inside the house and showed me where he used to be invited to my father's house as a child.
Rodnice is Rodnice nad Labem on the Laba, on the Elbe River. That's where your father learned to swim, I take it, in the Laba, in the Elbe.
Yes. My grandmother actually was responsible for his interest in sports. She was one of those turn of the century bourgeois women who thought sports was part of embourgeoisement, becoming part of the middle class. And she encouraged my father's interest in sports. And so when he went swimming in the river, she watched, and she also encouraged him to row, which he took up in high school.
Your father seems to have had quite amazing sporting prowess. Can you tell us some of his achievements, some of the sports that he was that he took part in?
Well, he first started swimming, then he started rowing in high school, but he became a competitive swimmer at the age of 16 when he started reading the Times posted by swimmers in Prague. And in 1920, he co-founded the first swim club of Rodnice. And then he went to business school in Prague. And in Prague, he joined ČPK, which was the Czech swimming club. And from there, he became a water polo player. He participated in over 50 national competitions and in two Olympic Games, including the Berlin Olympics of 1936.
And say, when he was a kid, was he doing sports with Jewish kids in Jewish clubs or with Czech children?
Well, there was no Jewish club in Rodnice. So when he was a kid, there was no club at all in Rodnice. So when he was a kid, he was going to the river with friends, both Jews and non-Jews. However, he did tell me that sometimes when he went by himself, other kids would throw stones at him because they knew he was a Jew. And that was one of the reasons that he felt very strongly about participating in the Berlin Olympics of 1936 in defiance of an international and a Czechoslovak movement to boycott the Berlin Olympics, because he felt Jews should be able to prove themselves as athletically competent.
And what did he tell you, to go back up a little bit for a second, what did he tell you about growing up in a Czech town? How was it for the, I presume, small Jewish community?
Well, it was complicated because, of course, he was born in 1904 when Franz Josef was still the emperor of Austria-Hungary, and Rodnice was part of Bohemia, which was a province of Austria-Hungary, and the national language was German, and his parents spoke German. And my father, by the time he was 14 years old, was a citizen of the first Czechoslovak Republic. And he hated German, and he was proud of speaking Czech. He was caught between this nationalistic Czech fervor, which he took part in. He idolized and idealized Tomáš Masaryk, and he saw himself as a patriotic Czech. He was a lieutenant in the Czechoslovak army. And yet, Czech nationalists, number one, threw these stones at him when he was a kid. and were continued to be anti-Semitic as he grew older.
He took part in two Olympic Games, if I'm right, in 1928, and again, as you already said, in Berlin in 1936, when there was a boycott by many Jewish athletes and some states were against the Berlin Games. Tell us about his experience in Berlin.
Well, he described all of this in a diary that he wrote, which is part of a book called A Jewish Athlete, which I put together, which you can get on Amazon. And he said what was amazing in 1936 was the Nazis sanitized the Olympic Village. So there were no swastikas in the Olympic Village. However, he pointed out that the German athletes stuck together and did not fraternize with the other teams. And they always marched together in formations. And he said they goose-stepped even to the bathrooms.
You say that Jewish sportsmen are seen as some kind of joke, both by some Jews and by anti-Semites. Why is that?
I think because Jews pride themselves on their intellectual capacities. And I think even philo-Semites think of Jews as people who are good at anecdotes and people who are good at solving intellectual issues. And they feel that after years of living in the ghetto, that Jews are somehow diminished physically. The contemporary version of that, of course, is Woody Allen. He is the skinny, intellectual, neurotic Jew. And in my travels around the world, because I'm an author, I do a lot of traveling, I'm always amazed at how everyone seems to see the Woody Allen or the Kafka Jew as the prototypical Jew. Whereas being the daughter of a jock, I've always seen Jews as perfectly normal people who come in all sizes, tall and short. My father was quite tall, he was quite handsome, and he was very, very strong. You know, water polo is not a game for shrinking violets. So I was always annoyed by this joke. However, I'm not a person who is deeply interested in sports, despite having had a jock for a father. So I didn't really do anything about it for many years. And then a couple of years ago, I decided the time had come and I had an opportunity to put together this exhibit about Jews in sports and about my father.
You mentioned Kafka. Wasn't Kafka into exercise and his own kind of working out?
Yes, he definitely was. And he liked to hike and he liked to swim in the nude. But somehow this never comes to the forefront of people's discussion of Kafka. Today, he might have been a vegan.
Maybe you've already answered this question, but there seems to be quite a history of Jews in sport before the Holocaust. Why has this been forgotten or evidently forgotten?
Good question. The main reason why, first of all, there were Jews in the first Olympics, the first contemporary Olympics, which were in 1896 in Athens. And after that, there were Jews in every Olympics, and there were many, many hundreds of Central European Jews in athletics, in all kinds of sports, in gymnastics, in boxing, in football, in fencing. But of course, the Holocaust eradicated this entire generation of Jews, including Jewish sportsmen. And after the Holocaust, the combination of totalitarianism in Central Europe and the Jewish looking down on sports as something lesser combined to eradicate the memory of these athletes. So both the people themselves and their memory were eradicated because of the Second World War. But in fact, before the war, there were many, many, many Jewish athletes. My father was not an exception.
After the war, your dad returned to Prague, after the Holocaust, returned to Prague and joined the Czechoslovak Olympic Committee. Is that correct?
Yes, he was elected to the Czechoslovak National Olympic Committee. He was still regarded as a major swim coach after the war. And in fact, I'm told that the night I was born in Prague, he was at an Olympic Committee meeting.
Your family moved to the States in 1948. Your father was by then in his 40s. Did he continue with sport in some way in America?
That was a great disappointment for him. He was unable to continue in sports. This was a man for whom swimming had been his life. And of course, when in New York City, in Manhattan, where we lived in 1948 to 1975, when he died, there was very little interest in swimming and certainly no interest in water polo. The only place where they played water polo was at the New York Athletic Club, which at the time was restricted, meaning that it didn't allow Jews inside its building, let alone as a coach. My father actually went there to apply for a job as a coach, and he was turned away. So what he did was every week he took the subway to Brooklyn, where there was an Olympic-sized pool at the St. George Hotel. And I remember going with him on the subway to the St. George Hotel. There was a waterfall, and a synthetic waterfall on one end of it, and my brother and I would play at that end while my father would swim laps.
And I gather it was a tough transition for him in general, moving to America.
It was a terrible transition for my father. He spoke no English. He was 44 years old. He had no vocational training except for his swimming coaching and performance. And he was the son of a factory owner. Eventually, he became a factory worker in the Garment Center in New York City.
Now you have a new exhibition coming up about your father at Terezin. What's the idea behind the exhibition?
Well, the idea behind the exhibition is to basically write this generation of Jewish athletes back into history. I'm very lucky to have had many, many photographs of my father's family. This is highly unusual for a family of Holocaust survivors. And the reason for that is that my father's teammate, the water polo goalie and engineer Josef Buschek, saved my father's photographs and also his prayer shawl in which he was bar mitzvah in 1917. And that has become the centerpiece of the exhibit, surrounded by all of these wonderful sports photos and family photos that date back to 1900.
Just on a point of information, your father was in the Czechoslovak water polo team at the Olympic Games.
Yes, he was in the water polo team at the Olympic Games, but in national competitions, particularly in the early 1930s, he also competed in swimming competitions. He has photographs from Algiers, from Barcelona, from Budapest, from all over Italy. It's really a wonderful collection.
Well, I've got to say, as somebody who's keen but very amateur swimmer, I have enormous respect for any water polo player because I think they are the fittest, the toughest dudes. It's an amazing sport.
Yes, it is. It's known as aquatic rugby. So that gives you an idea of how rough it is.
That interview with Helen Epstein was first broadcast in August of last year. The new exhibition about Kurt Epstein runs from the 2nd of May to June 30th at the American Center here in Prague. And that's all we have time for right now on Radio Prague International. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you so much for joining us and speak to you again very soon.